Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
This is Veronica Linnea of the Shame Free Zone. I'm sorry for the delay there. We're just having a little difficulty here at the end. I couldn't hear the music, so I didn't know when it stopped. Anyway, I assume we're on the air now. And I've actually got a very exciting show for you tonight. Very much looking forward to this. I am interviewing Sonia Bandolik, and she is a writer, college-educated married woman, and she works in a legal Nevada brothel. So she's got a lot of exciting things to share with us tonight. Sonia, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you, Veronica.
So you started off in Missouri, is that true?
I was raised in Missouri.
Yeah.
And as soon as I turned 21, I escaped.
You escaped? Is that what you said? Okay, so I guess it is. Was it Missouri for you? I've heard that joke about Missouri.
Yeah, well, it was a great place to be raised in, and it was a great place to be from, but not a place to stay.
Yeah, and then you got married, I guess. Well, did you go to college first or get married first?
Both.
Both.
I traveled the country to piece together a degree. And I did that while I was married and a new mother.
And and a mother too. Wow. That's a lot. You take on a lot. What did you study?
I was a psychology major until the 11th hour, and then I switched over to English.
It's very interesting, actually, because psychology was my major. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then my minor was in business administration. So, but I tutored English actually. On campus. So, when I was reading about you, I saw so many similarities between us, and I was just fascinated by that because, of course, the public oftentimes thinks that, escorts, courtesans, prostitutes, whatever word they happen to want to use in relation to those of us who provide sexual services or have provided sexual services for money, there'll be an assumption that we don't have kids, we don't have families, we're not happily married, or that we're not college educated. And it's just wonderful, I think, to bust those stereotypes and to try to help people become more educated about the profession and about us as individuals. Now, you're actually working on a book right now.
Yes, it's called Sex Warrior, and it's basically, I've been in dysfunctional sexual relationships throughout my life. I've always been struggling with trying to be sexually self-actualized, and I finally reached a point in my life where I was going to do it consciously, purposefully, and publicly. So I decided to make my quest into a story that I was actually going to live as I wrote it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've done, and that's pretty much what drew me into all these little adventures this past year so that I could explore some sexual subcultures personally.
Well, when you say adventures this past year, does that include working at the legal brothel?
It does.
Yeah. So you've only been doing it for about a year.
Right. I started last year and tried everything from, well, I've been a nudist for quite a while, but nudism, swinging, lifestyle resorts, then to the brothel. So trying to explore all the different options that are readily available but mostly misunderstood.
What is it that you think you've learned so far? I mean, how has prostitution been a plus to your life?
Prostitution has taught me more than... It's taught me all the things I was looking to learn, which the other subcultures didn't quite catch for me. And the key was the negotiation, which was the most terrifying part for me, actually, because, you know, I was a swinger before, so sex with... casual sex with people I didn't know very well wasn't new to me. But the idea of having to negotiate the value of what I had to offer was terrifying. But it was the most important thing, and that's the thing that had been missing in my life all along, is to be in charge of determining my value and to have somebody honor that value and then achieve a balance so that we didn't have an imbalance of trade there.
Your first marriage was to a domineering man who insisted on open marriage, but he liked to orchestrate the circumstances of that. So although you were allowed to have sex with other people, he would decide who, how, when, what. Is that true?
Right. So it was open for him. It wasn't open for me. And what happened was I ended up subjugating everything that I wanted. I would parrot what he wanted, and I kind of lost myself there. After so many years, I forgot what it was that I wanted or that I ever wanted anything for myself.
Well, it's also, I think, often a mistake, mistaken assumption that people will think that sexual services provider is not empowered and not able to say no, obviously, that hasn't been your experience. It wasn't my experience either when I was working as an escort from 1989 to 2004. I found it to actually be hugely empowering, but it's not always an easy thing to explain to other people. How do you explain that?
I think our culture is skewed against service, people who provide nurturing for a living. I think that there's some kind of a subconscious belief that if you accept money for nurturing activities, that you're not really a nurturer. I experienced that in teaching where they said, you know, if you really cared about the kids, you wouldn't care about the money. I experienced that in other things. Mothers don't get paid. They're not expected to get paid, and yet that's the most nurturing of all the vocations that you can have. On sex work, sex is amazingly intimate and nurturing, and there seems to be some kind of a taint on accepting reward for doing it.
I think so too, yes. And in particular, I think whenever women start charging for anything, nurturing, sex, it's almost like, no, you're supposed to, you know, your work is supposed to be undervalued. We don't want to pay you for it. You just should do it because you feel guilty or obligated. So if you do sex for free, that's great. But if you start charging for it, it becomes highly immoral. And it seems in a lot of ways our culture is predicated upon the idea that women shouldn't get paid. And the only time they should get paid is if they do something that's, you know, stereotypically associated with men work.
Right.
What's the name of your book?
The book is Sex Warrior.
Okay.
And sex as my battlefield.
Okay. Interesting. There was a beautiful picture of you on your website of you kind of dressed like an Amazon warrior. I believe that's what you're... I don't know. Maybe you're wearing a costume for something else, but would you say that's an Amazon warrior or what?
Yeah, to be a warrior. And that's the thing... Most people don't understand the most important thing that a warrior needs to learn is how to protect their own territory, to serve and protect your own territory and keep it safe. And so coming out of sexually dysfunctional relationships, that really was the most important thing for me to learn, is how to protect my own personal territory, myself. And that's where the warrior comes in. And to learn how to do that and share it with other people, because I tend to draw people that have had situations similar to mine. I guess we all attract what we are. But I've encountered a lot of women who need to know this.
Well, yes, and I think hopefully between the two of us, we maybe can help our listeners understand this journey. This is a difficult one for a lot of people to get. How is it that a woman actually learns about healthy boundaries and being a warrior and protecting herself when she walks into a situation where she's agreeing to have sex with strangers? Most people would actually see that as an obliteration of one's boundaries and self-care and an abandonment of self. That was not my experience of it. I can tell it's not yours either, but how do you explain that to people who've never had that experience, especially women who would think that sex for money would be the most demoralizing, degrading thing they could possibly do?
Well, I'll compare it to, because I had the swinging background, I'll compare it to sex for free versus sex for money. In sex for free, in the swinging background, even though it's all consenting adults, there's still an element of manipulation, an element of seduction. There's lying. There's all kinds of undercurrents of things going on, and it's almost never a balanced trade. In the brothel, the brothels are run by women for the most part. Even if the owner of the brothel is a male, the girls run it internally. So there's a lot of pressure from the girls that you don't undersell yourself. So even though you're in competition, all the other girls insist that you don't undersell. And they try to help you to keep the level up. Because if one, and it's almost a microcosm of our society, if you undersell yourself as a woman, you create a standard, and you cause a reaction, and it hurts other women. And that happens in a very tangible sense in the brothel. So there's a lot of pressure for you to stand up for yourself and to maintain a high value for what you have to offer.
Wow. So this is actually a huge insight for me, because I've never worked in the brothels. My experience about finding empowerment and more boundaries was that I'd never felt so powerful and so self-determined as when I was completely naked in a pair of high heels.
Exactly.
It's like, I didn't have to hide behind the clothes or propriety or somehow or another that I'm a good woman, so I deserve to be protected. There's something about being beyond the pale that put me in a position of being completely self-actualized and knowing I'm the one that's going to protect me. I'm the one that's going to say yes or no and decide how things play out.
And that happened to me as well. No, it was tough, but that's exactly what I needed to learn.
Well, and it's interesting to me that you and I both come out of sexually, I don't know that you would probably term your marriage abusive. Certainly I came out from a sexually abusive background, but certainly, your marriage was at least less than egalitarian. Your husband was trying to have more power in the relationship than you.
And no, it was extremely abusive.
Would you call it abusive? Yes.
Okay. Oh, very extremely abusive.
Yeah. It's amazing that you and I both found our salvation, if you will, in going towards something that society looks at as being immoral. There's a line from your, I think this is from your book, this could be from your blog, that it says, here I am working as a courtesan, a profession the mainstream considers intrinsically immoral, yet there's nothing we do in life that can't be done for a higher purpose. So when I was working, I very quickly went into a practice that I considered sacred prostitution. And it changed my whole life. It changed the way I interact with my clients. I would love to know what you mean by that when you talk about a higher purpose. What higher purpose?
Well, people ask me sometimes, how do I separate myself out whenever I'm with a client? How do I separate my feelings? And I find that a little crazy, because why would I separate myself into, divide myself up into pieces? I'm a whole person, and I'm a very spiritual person, so everything I do with spirituality ingrained in it. I don't separate that out. I'm a Reiki master. I've been a healer for years. That goes with me in everything that I do. Any job can be it's not inherently sacred. Prostitution obviously is not inherently sacred. Teaching is not. Being a mother is not. Because anybody can mess up a job. But if you view the job as your vocation, if it means something to you that's deeper than a means to an end, that's what's the beginning of becoming sacred work. And you need to tap into that energy, that sacred energy, and you can do that. You could be a toilet cleaner and tap into sacred energy. Gandhi did.
Yes.
So there's really no job that's so low that it can't be elevated.
Well, absolutely. And prostitution's really had a bad rap. I think of the women who have worked as prostitutes historically. There's a lot of things that would have never happened if it hadn't been for the prostitutes. The Gold Rush era, the women who came out before there were sidewalks and roads were prostitutes. They were the only ones hardy enough to lift up their skirts and hike through those rapid running cold icy waters and walk in streets of mud. And when the Civil War took place, there was need for a lot of hospitals for the soldiers. Well, those ended up being in the brothels. The brothels are the ones that opened the doors to care for the wounded soldiers. And when Florence Nightingale started recruiting nurses, she could not get a single woman to go into the nursing profession because it was taboo for women to see naked bodies or touch naked bodies. So she ended up recruiting prostitutes, and the very first nurses were prostitutes. But this part of our history is really suppressed. And, these women are heroes. These women have done amazing things. They've blazed trails and made life as we know it possible for us. But they're not celebrated that way. And I think that's a great loss.
Oh, I totally agree. I was surprised because I went in with the same stereotypes. I thought I was more enlightened because of my background. I thought I had seen so much and that I knew a lot. But I had so many preconceived notions about what to expect when I came to the brothel, and almost none of them were true. And one, I thought I would stick out like a sore thumb because of my education, because I'm happily married, because I'm a Reiki master, because I'm scholarly, and I had to work my butt off to try to keep up with these girls on every level. They were no schleps. They really kept me on my toes.
Wow. That is so great. And are you allowed to mention the name of the brothel that you work in?
Yes, it's the Dovetail Ranch, and we're in Carlin, Nevada. We're out in the middle. It's been dubbed the most relaxed brothel in Nevada, and some other people call it the Zen brothel. But we're a very small house, four or five girls at a time. And we cater to locals, ranchers, miners, people in the town. It's not a tourist trap.
Yeah. Why do you call it the Zen brothel?
We are literally in the middle of the desert, and we have a panoramic view of mountains all around us. And we have we sit on a hot springs. We have a natural hot springs. I call it the cowboy hot tub. It's a plastic container that we fill up, and we have to let it cool for about an hour so we can get in. But it's all, yeah, we run out of cold water here.
It's not something. You run out of cold water. So how do you cool your water?
It actually goes into containers, large containers outside, and it cools overnight. And that's how much cold water we have. And when that runs out, then we just have hot water. So the girls who get their showers earliest get nice showers, and the ones who wait get a little bit pink when they come out.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. I'm sorry, it's probably not funny at all, but I just, you know.
That's funny to me. I'm an early riser.
Well, the rest of the world is struggling to get hot water, you know. So I think that's just, it's an interesting reversal. So now how long have you been married? And this is your second marriage, right?
Right. My first marriage, I was married 20 years, and 15 of those years were spent in therapy trying to save the marriage. And then now my husband, my current husband, Richard, and I have been married for 12 years.
So 12 years you've been married to Richard. And there's a place in your book where you talk about you're working with a client. And you say, after I wrap the party, I go to the kitchen. I've been uplifted. I'm glowing. Monica is cooking dinner. Richard looks up from his laptop. Wow, you were in there a long time. In spite of the concern of his comment, his eyes go soft when I smile at him. I kiss the back of his neck and wrap my arms around him. I know, he needed to talk. The job of explaining what is really important in a love relationship has actually rekindled the reality of my own love and brought some luscious feelings to the surface. I love you, baby. This man who is not only my husband but my best friend feels brand new in my embrace. He turns his face to meet me and kisses me on the mouth. I love you too, honey. This is hardly the picture that most people probably have in their mind when they think about a married prostitute. And yet what you are describing here is incredibly loving, accepting, safe, romantic connection. Was it always that way? Was there ever a time when Richard didn't like your choice, or did he try to fight it in any way, or has he been open to the idea from the beginning?
He's been open from the beginning. Richard and I started, I told you my other marriage, I was 20 years into my marriage. We were in therapy 15 of those years. He wouldn't go into therapy with me the last year unless I went to a sex therapist, which I did, and the sex therapist promptly said, stop swinging. Get some intimacy. And my husband's response to that was, we were having a party that was not supposed to be, it was supposed to be just a community party. He popped three Viagras and turned it into a orgy because he was actually attracted to Richard's wife. Richard and his wife were parents of kids that my daughter was hanging out with. So they were at the party. So my husband got with Richard's wife, and then threw Richard and I together repeatedly, and we ended up falling in love, and that's how we met. So
wow.
We were two people who would have never met each other ever, 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 but we ended up falling in love, and when we did, it was limerence. It was actually, I literally saw a bolt of light, and we fell in love like lightning had struck us. And so we were incredibly passionate. I called it sex hell, which was a good term of endearment for not being able to get off of each other.
Well,
but
how
we've always been very passionate.
Well, I'm wondering how, so I'm sure the listeners would want to know how Richard navigates jealousy. Does he ever get jealous when you're with clients?
When we first got together, and there was a lot of insecurities because of how hard we had to struggle to make everything go together because of the drama, there was insecurities on both of our sides. But after so many years and being so solid with each other, once the insecurities fell away, then we were left with the fact that both of us had spent our entire adult lives as being sexually free, and we kind of missed that freedom. And so that's some of the experimentation began with swinging, and that didn't quite work for me. So we dropped that, but we still, you know, we still had a gap in our life that we were still looking for a little something more. And this was perfect because it's controlled, it's safe, it's been empowering for me, and that was one of the things that helped my sexuality, and then ultimately helped our sexuality, is the fact that I'm more comfortable with it. I'm more secure about myself, and I'm more able to speak up and say what I like. And having the experience, now I'm more open to receiving pleasure.
I've actually become more orgasmic since I've become a prostitute.
Oh, do tell about that, because, you know, I had the same experience. People always go, oh, you must have been so tired. And I actually made an agreement with my husband, which was that I would not have orgasms with my clients. So for me, when I got home after work, I was just completely sexually frustrated. and there was no foreplay required.
Good for him.
I was all fired up and ready to go. So how does it work for you? Each of us is individuals. We have different experiences. I'm wondering how it works for you.
Well, for me, it used to be, actually in my first marriage, I thought there was something wrong with me. I was known for being quiet in bed. It took a long time for me to have an orgasm. And it took some of these experiences, and, you know, even in swinging, you know, because different lovers didn't do it for me. And it took the fact that I found out in the brothel that when men are actually paying me and they can get anything that they want, and I am literally their servant for that period of time that they purchased, what they want the most, I would say like 98% of them, what they want the most is my pleasure. And that really cracked through my jaded and cynical attitude about men. I always thought they were playing me, manipulating me, you know, just trying to get what they wanted. But they really only want my pleasure. So I had to relax and try to give that to them. And then I started to realize a lot of my not receiving pleasure didn't have as much to do with my lover as it had to do with my head. And when I started to let go and let that energy flow, my body became more receptive to pleasure.
So what part of your head did you have to let go of in order to have more pleasure?
Well, I think, I'm 52, so I think that someone from my era, when you were growing up as a kid, you were conditioned and socialized to, especially as a girl, you know, sex is not good, the boys all want it, girl, you know, they're trying to get it from girls. Girls, you know, you need to keep from giving this, and it's characterized as something that you shouldn't want, that guys enjoy more than girls, that you shouldn't be going for, and if you do, then you're a slut and a bad person. And so even if you intellectually give those up, I think some of the remnants kind of hang in there, and even if you don't know you didn't get rid of them, they're there.
Right.
So there was a lot of casting off of baggage I had to do, and I guess like toilet paper stuck on the bottom of your shoe, sometimes you're carrying around stuff you don't know. And so that was that was sort of the end of it.
Well, you know, I think for myself, a lot of it was feeling all of that adoration and sexual energy coming towards me. Just really got me in touch with my own sexuality. It helped me. My job became to be sexy and to feel sexy, and so I did. And I noticed that I just felt like that gave me permission to move through life feeling sexually empowered, sexually enabled. And instead of, I think what a lot of women are kind of walking around with this apology, it's like in their body language, they're apologizing. I think about all of the men who just wanted to see what a woman looked like with the lights on because their wives insisted that the covers were up and the lights were off, you know, for 20 years. And I think of all the women that I've talked to who have never even taken out a hand mirror to see what their genitals look like, let alone praying in front of a mirror and you know, just really get off on their own loveliness. It seemed to me like the sex industry gave me permission to really embrace myself as being sexy and sexual, so that I wasn't apologizing for it. And have you had a similar metamorphosis, or?
I have, and a lot of it, like the lineup at the brothel. I thought, you know, because you watch those TV shows like the Bunny Ranch show and all that, and you think that that's what a brothel is like. And that's Hollywood. The lineups I was in.
I've been on TV with Dennis Hoff. I'd love to know how is the Bunny Ranch different from the brothel you're in?
Well, his county, the girls can be as young as 18, and he's all the other counties, they have to at least be 21. So he runs that brothel is like near Vegas. It's for tourists. He sticks with the younger 18 to 25 range. They're usually not all, but he's got a standard look he's looking for, more cookie cutter. In the rural brothels, the women are, because we have less women, so each woman is sort of like she represents a particular category of women that men go for. Because the thing is men don't go for the one kind of woman. As, you know, you might think looking at the Bunny Ranch that, you know, that one kind of woman is the standard of beauty. And she's not. Men want what they want. And it might be the little petite, fat-bottom girl covered with tattoos. It might be the Russian girl with the lyrical accent who's in her 50s. It might be the tall Amazon Barbie. It might be the short little girl that looks like a college student. You never know what they want. I know I was at Bella's briefly, and I missed, they were gone before I got there, but a couple of ladies had just left. One was an extraordinarily large woman who came in because of client request. They wanted a big woman. And another one was a midget by request. And she gets a lot of work. She travels the country and gets a lot of work. So
there is
no particular girl that they're looking for.
It's true. It's absolutely true. Men, and I think that men whose sexual tastes run counter to the dominant culture's message about what is beautiful, I think sometimes they're actually embarrassed and try to hide this fact from their friends, especially like if they like older women or big girls. They might be actually kind of embarrassed to even let anybody know. And it's so sad that all the women are trying to look one way and all the men are trying to pretend that they like women who look one way. And nothing could be further from the truth. In my experience, that was one of the things that I found so freeing about the sex industry was discovering how diverse sex workers are. They come in all sizes, shapes, ages, you know, races. It's beautiful.
Yeah, sexy is everything. It just depends on the combination you're putting together. And that was also freeing for me. The fact that a lot of things about myself that I was trying to underplay ended up being things that I needed to market. My age, I needed to market. different shape, you know, details about my body. Women get so self-conscious about their body if there's anything irregular or different from the glossy magazines. And I found that sometimes the more different you are from a glossy magazine, the better off you are.
Oh, I think it's true. I absolutely think, and boy, it really depends on what magazines you're looking at, too. Because if you are just looking at Vogue and Cosmopolitan and all the fashion magazines that are out there for women, then you've got a really skewed view of the female body, because most of those models are prepubescent or barely pubescent. They've dieted down to a point where they don't have a period anymore. And, of course, some of them we know are dieting to the point that they're dropping dead from heart failure. But even excluding those more extreme cases of anorexia, there is this culture in the fashion industry of many just trying to turn women into boys so that they have no curves. But if you look at a men's magazine, you're going to see women who definitely have their periods. They have a little bit of padding. They look like they'd be able to carry a baby to term. And if you believe the scientists, that's actually like one of the determining things just biologically that men are attracted to women who could procreate, certainly not women who are too young or too skinny or too sickly, throwing up every day or addicted to drugs. So I think women have a really skewed opinion of what constitutes beauty, and it's kind of sad, because same thing with breast implants. I don't know how you feel about those. I have lots of friends that have them, so I'm certainly not against them per se, but I do know that, you know, the pressure that some women feel to modify their bodies in that way isn't really reflected by male taste. A lot of guys will actually say they prefer natural.
Exactly. And the girls do it. And I'm not against plastic surgery to a degree. I mean, I, you know, when people go nuts with it, then, you know, I notice what nuts looks like. But I get upset or concerned whenever the young girls, like the 21-year-old, the 25-year-old, are trying to alter their body. Their bodies are fine, but they're so insecure. And you can't tell them enough that they're okay, or that, you know, maybe, you know, if you exercise, or maybe if you do this, or this outfit just looks better on you. You don't have to cut. You don't have to go under the knife. And that's the most likely group to start doing the plastic surgery. They're not secure enough or solid about themselves.
There's a lot of that. Botox parties for 18-year-olds. It's really sad. You know, I'm looking at
the brothels. Actually, have Botox at the brothels.
What?
Some of the brothels actually have the procedures available there at the brothel.
At the brothel, yes.
They get their vaccinations for STDs. They can get their Botox shots, their manicures, their pedicures.
Yeah.
It's all there.
It's crazy, isn't it? I think every woman has the right to choose whatever cocktail of self-improvement she wants and what calls to her. But I do love giving women an opportunity to enlarge their perspective on what it means to be sexy and attractive, because I think women are very limited by the media. And I think sex workers really are in a unique position to be able to tell women, no, you know, limiting yourself. If you undervalue, you don't understand that your age is a asset. I know for me, my feisty, independent personality, my outspoken way of being in the world was really welcomed as a courtesan. This became a powerful strength of something that when I was working in an office environment did not play very well, but as a courtesan, it helped me get very exclusive gigs with clients, because I had this edge to offer, which was really my brain. My brain was a big part, and I would imagine that you, as a very intelligent woman, are finding that your brain is a huge part of that, too. You say something that I just think is so beautiful, and I want to read this again. This is another favorite quote that I've pulled from your book, and this is where you're talking to a man who is trying to, he's soliciting advice from you about making love to his wife. And perhaps it's his girlfriend, but anyway, and this is what you say to him. You say, you need to understand that everything is sex. When you're kind to her, that is foreplay. When you do things for her, support her, protect her, that's foreplay. When you reveal your vulnerability to her, that's foreplay. It's good to think of sex all the time if you understand that good sex is all about not just the physical union, but spiritual, emotional, and mental unions as well. In all you do, if you have those unions in mind, your sexual connection will stay strong. Every good thing you do with her in your heart is the beginning of lovemaking. Make her a part of you and let her do the same. Then get closer and closer until your intimacy draws your bodies together. Every bit of her skin, her spirit, and her thoughts can be part of turning her on sexually. Unless she tells you she doesn't like something in particular, use her entire being as your path to sex with her. Massage, cuddle, tease, kiss, and most of all, love her, and she'll be as lust-filled as you are. I think that's exquisite. I think it's beautiful. And it's not at all the kind of message that people would expect to get from a sex worker. You know, I think it's fabulous. I think there's a whole new crop of sex workers who are turning out a different message. In the past, it might have been, here's a window into my life, and I saw this client, and I saw that client, and I traveled to this island, blah, 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 and, I made this much money. So what I would call kind of a tell-all. We had a period in history where everybody had a prostitution tell-all. And I think Right. Now we're starting to birth these self-help books. We're starting to really show up for the idea that as sex workers and former sex workers, we have a wealth of information that is not just helpful, but probably vital to other people who have no association with prostitution. You know, men that have never seen prostitutes, women that will never be prostitutes, that we actually can be relationship coaches. And I believe that you have invented yourself. This is something you're moving into, is being a relationship coach, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done that before I became a sex worker. But the thing that I found, I was watching a woman who was a sexual surrogate, a story about her, and they made the comment that what she does is legal because she's trying to help these men move on, whereas a prostitute is trying to get them to come back and keep them sort of addicted and enslaved to her.
Right.
And I thought that was kind of interesting because I don't have any need to have anybody. There's plenty of people out there who need the services of a prostitute. For whatever reason, there's a thousand reasons why a man might go to a prostitute, and there's plenty of men that will. There's no reason to try to keep a particular person enslaved or inhibited and try to keep him hanging on and coming back. It can be better than that, what we do.
Absolutely. Those stereotypes abound, you know, and it's so easy for people to fix those to the sex industry without really knowing anybody. I mean, I would think anybody within the sound of your voice can tell that you're a highly intelligent woman, and that you're a deep thinker, that you've got a very feeling and engaged heart, and that you love very deeply. It's obvious that you really love Richard. These are not traits that people usually associate with the profession of courtesan or prostitute, and I certainly don't think it's things people associate with brothels. what do you see for the future? You've been doing this for a year. Do you think you're going to continue to do it for another year or two, or are you going to move on to other adventures?
Well, I'm interested in continuing with this because this, more than any other thing that we've done, has worked. It's worked on a lot of different levels for us. And I'm encountering a lot of people that are enriching my life because the men that come here are they're salt of the earth guys, and they're bringing some incredible stories to the table, and I'm becoming deeper and more of a person because I'm encountering them, and so it's opened up travel for us. It made us richer with each other, so there's absolutely no reason to stop. So I'm going to continue on as long as I can. And ironically, I just happen to be at my age at a time when my age is pretty popular.
Yeah.
So,
you know, Sonia, I was born in 1960, as were you. So,
luck of the draw.
just turned 52, and I think it's a beautiful, beautiful time to be alive, and it's certainly a beautiful time to be a woman who's in, you know, in her 50s. And so there's all kinds of young men out there that remind us that we're the hot ticket right now, huh?
Well, it's the young men, and then when I was in my first marriage, it was a May December, so he was more than twice my age. And he told me from the time I was 21 that women have a limited expiration date. And, you know, by the time they hit 40, if they're not settled in a marriage and solid and got themselves set, then their life's pretty much over. And mm-hmm. I bought into that. And my whole life, when I was little, I was told I wanted to take ballet lessons, and I was told, no, if you didn't take it since you were a toddler, then you might as well not bother. And I wanted to be a model, and they said, well, if you're not this tall, you might as well not bother. And then, you know, I wanted to be an actress, and they said, well, you're a little too old now since you started, so you might as well not bother. And my whole life, I've been told as a woman that I'm too old for whatever it was I wanted to do, and I bought into it. Mm-hmm. And now I don't care anymore. I'm going to do what I want to do. And all of a sudden, I'm realizing that there really wasn't anything that was excluded from my experience except what I allowed to be excluded.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Sonia, I want to make sure our listeners go over to check out your website, because as soon as they see pictures of you, they're going to realize that you are able to cash the check you've written. You're a beautiful woman, and you've got two websites here. The one for the book. The book again is Sex Warrior, and that is personalasitgets.com. Personalasitgets.com, and then the website, which I think is your personal website, but you talk about the brothel, so people could actually book an appointment with you at the brothel, and then you've also got links to looks like magazines that you've interviewed for. It's got lots of pretty pictures here, and that's sexwithsonia.com. Sonia is spelled S-O-N-J-A, sexwithsonia.com. And is there anything else that you want them to know? We've got about 5 minutes left here, but I just want to give you a chance to tell them how they can get a hold of you, book an appointment with you, and also how to get a copy of your book.
Okay, well, the copy of my book, you would go to the Personal as It Gets site. Right now, it's at pre-sale, and you can buy it at pre-sale prices. You'll just have to wait. It's going to be released on the summer solstice, so this is going to be my solstice baby. And if you want to actually meet me or buy any of my services or find out, I did 4 porn films. That was another little subculture I explored this year. And
oh, good.
So you can
Yeah, you can find out about those and or book a date with me or buy pictures or video from me at the Sex with Sonia site.
Sex with Sonia. And I should say that you have been described as a brick house. It looks like you work out quite a bit, do you?
Every day.
Every day.
The treadmill and weights.
Treadmill and weights. Good for you. Yeah. It takes devotion, doesn't it?
Actually, it takes Richard. He's on my butt all the time. He makes me work out.
Oh, is he? And is there an age discrepancy between you and Richard?
No, we're age appropriate. He's just a couple of years older than me.
Yeah.
Which seems odd because everybody I knew my whole life before everybody was about 20 to 30 years older than me. So he seemed like a baby when I met him, even though he's older than me.
I think any age combination is appropriate as long as the people who are doing it are happy with it. If it works for them, then it's appropriate. But
yeah.
I hear you guys are closer. And it sounds like you're kind of happy to be away from the older men here for a while.
Well, probably after 12 years, I'm not quite as bitter as I was when I first left. And so everything about him used to be a bad thing, but really it was the controlling, manipulative behavior on his part. It really wasn't any other quality besides that.
Yeah.
So I can forgive the rest of mankind.
Sonia, before we go, I cannot resist the menu. You've got a menu here. This is awesome. You've got divine divergination, sublime 69, back in the saddle party, breast sex, watch and yearn, multi-girl parties, exclusive lessons, bachelor parties, bubble bath, sensual massage, two guys, a girl in a private place, role play, it's Greek to me, and build your own party. So what in the heck is divine divergination?
That's when somebody wants to lose their virginity in a brothel. Because frequently they want, either they have very consciously made a decision to come in on their own, or here in Nevada, generations of people, of men, have been coming to the brothel, and sometimes a father will bring his son in, or a grandfather and a father will bring their son in, or an uncle, his nephew, for the first brothel time. So there's a certain responsibility that you have whenever you bring in a young man in for the very first sexual experience. It kind of sets the tone for him. So you have a great opportunity there to help the rest of womankind by helping him to be a great lover.
Yes. I have done that about three times, actually. Three times. And it is, I think, a very sacred responsibility. You have to show up for it with all yourself. Because,
you teach him that sex is not just getting your stick wet. There's a whole lot more to it.
Well, and the young men that I have de-virginized were just, you know, some of them, not all of them, but some of them could be very emotionally vulnerable. So.
Exactly.
Needed a lot of TLC. Okay, my God, this one just whizzed by. I have to have you back. Is Sex Warrior out there already, or is it coming?
It's coming. It's going to be released officially on the summer solstice. For people who buy it through the pre-sale, they may get their copies before it comes out officially.
Okay. Well, please stay in touch. And when this book has been out for a while, or when you get ready to write that third one, or maybe if you've got another film, anything, reality TV show, keep us posted here at BBS Radio, so that we can have you back here. This has been a fascinating and exciting episode, and I really thank you for the interview. Once again, my guest tonight was Sonia Vandalik, and she is from the Dovetail Brothel in Carlin, Nevada, and her book is Sex Warrior. You can get your personal copy at personalasitgets.com, and you can also check out her fabulous Sex with Sonia menu at sexwithsonia.com. Sonia, thanks so much.
Thanks, Veronica.
Okay. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak menutup kabar berita?